Rick Stevens, financial advisor with FRS Financial Group. Securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA SIPC. The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision. For more detailed information regarding any of the topics discussed on today's show, please call 719-500-8700. This is Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial. Here's your host, Rick Stevens.
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial Group. I am your host, Rick Stevens, and remember that this is your show. Folks, if you've got questions that you would like to ask, if there are any topics you would like to hear on a future episode of Money Matters, feel free to give me a call at 719-500-8700. You can also send me an email, rstevens@frsfinancialgroup.com, or simply go to our website, frsfinancialgroup.com. Click that contact tab, send us that question, send us that topic you'd like a little bit more information about. We would love to hear from you. Well, folks, this week on Money Matters, we are joined, as always, by my co-host, Andrew Rogers. Andrew, the football season is a week old now.
It is.
And your team's looking a lot better than my team is.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't want to say that, you know, there's been a lot of talk about asterisks or not, but, I mean, still, at the end of the day, the numbers don't lie.
Well, you know, you can only play against the team that's out there in front of you, whether or not, you know, Travis Kelce is hurt and whether or not Kadarius Toney forgot how to catch a ball. It doesn't matter because at the end of the day, it's either a W or an L.
Well, it's not like Marvin Jones remembered how to catch a ball either. So
or it's not like he, you know, had his first fumble of his career.
Yeah.
And, you know. So there are always things to overcome
out there. And we also know, too, looking a little bit more locally, that that old adage, the more things change, the more things seem the same, seems to maybe be true
Yes.
up in the Mile High City.
Yes. Yes, indeed. You know, although I will say this, this year the opening game was a lot closer than last year's opening game was. Simply just looking at it from that perspective of they didn't fumbled twice inside the one when you could have just run a quarterback sneak.
But as someone I do a show with once a week here would say, that math doesn't math because I'm pretty sure they were both 17 to 16.
True.
Including some missed field goals.
Yes, yes, so. Yes. But hey, we didn't forget how to manage the clock and you know, could have gone a little further downfield this year. Well, folks, this week on Money Matters, we are going to talk a little bit about behavior,
okay,
Andrew, and I want to actually kind of open up this week's show with a commercial that I have heard I don't know how many times over the last several months, and it always leaves me scratching my head, right? It's a commercial for one of those debt management places that talk about, you know, we'll be able to get you out of debt, blah blah blah, but one of the things they say is, They're talking about the average person who carries credit card debt, and that average person is over $17,000 into credit card debt. But, Andrew, they claim it's not your fault.
Yeah, I mean, that credit card just jumped out of your wallet and ran up those purchases.
Yeah, you know, it's not your fault. It's you know, it's the credit card company, and they lied to you about this, that, and the other. And there's that you know, the math doesn't math part of me in there that looks at that and says, I think it might be my fault if I've run up $17,000 worth of credit card debt.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I think that, you know, we're getting into that, you know, larger, you know, behavior anyway. It's probably your fault if your clothes aren't fitting like they used to, if you're doing nothing but eating pizza rolls and ice cream all day long.
Oh, no. It's the spoon's fault, Andrew. The spoons made me fat. And the credit card companies made me spend money.
Well, you know, then we need to put a 3-day holding period on spoons and credit cards.
Yes.
Maybe some deeper background checks to get that bowl of ice cream next time.
Gotta get the blood sugar checked and make sure the triglycerides and the HDL LDL combination is working well.
Uh-oh.
To allow me that, right?
Well, we're getting a little too quasi political on that one.
I'm thinking more on the personal side. As the guy who has to wear that that continual glucose monitor, it's both a blessing and a curse, Andrew.
True.
To always know what my blood sugar is, but then I always know what my blood sugar is.
Yeah.
And I know that at some points in time, I actually have to take the croutons off the salad.
Well, I mean, it's better than that. I know somebody, I don't want to, completely throw them under the bus, had the gestational diabetes, so only had to deal with it for a little bit,
but would
do everything, take the test, everything's fine. All right, time to go splurge.
Yes.
Like, that just means keep doing what you're doing.
Right, right. It's not that free, right? You know, there's actually, and folks, we are so far off topic and into the weeds, but this is fun because I'm going to bring us back. But there's a movie, I think it was called Cactus Jack, or The Legend of Cactus, something like that. Anyway, there's a movie that my wife says is the most absolute hilarious line in any movie, right? And I'll set the scene for you here. There's a grandpa, aged gentleman, coming up, sitting at the table, and he's got this big plate full of, like, breakfast sausage.
Mm-hmm.
And the mom in the show, his daughter, walks in and says, "Dad, you can't eat that stuff." And he said, "They told me as long as I take these pills, I can have anything I want." To which she replies, "That's not what they said." And his response is, "Well, that's what I heard."
Yeah.
I think we live a lot like that.
Yeah,
these days.
And, going back to that, credit card conversation, we hear all the great stuff on, the onset. Get these, travel miles. Get cash back. What's in your wallet?
Yeah.
We don't actually look at the real details on the backside.
Exactly. Exactly. And that actually happens not just in that we end up in the credit card debt side of things. That happens, Andrew, in how we manage our own investments along the way. And folks, that's really what we're going to take a look at on today's Money Matters, is that sort of that behavioral investing side. There's a study, Andrew, that gets done every single year, and it's called the Dalbar study.
What is the Dalbar study?
So it's a wonderful question, because most folks, actually, I would not only just say most folks in the regular world don't know. There are probably a lot of folks in my industry who don't know what Dalbar means on Dalbar study. And Dalbar is actually a market research group.
Okay.
They're based out of Boston, and they have no horse in this rodeo, so to speak. They have no dog in the fight. They just simply look at the numbers and say, this is what the numbers say. So they do it from a totally emotionless, we're not trying to sell you anything approach. They simply give us, as Joe Friday would say, the facts.
Okay.
And Dalbar, their study is very consistent year over year in what it brings out. And the thing that I always, I guess I will say, kind of enjoy is being able to, as that nerd, look at those numbers and say, all right, it really does match up with what I kind of see along the way. Not the least of which is folks who are managing things on their own, who are not generally in the financial world. They're not immersed in it. They're not, they may have CNBC or Fox Business or something else turned on during the day, but they're not in there getting that deep information from various analysts and various perspectives. They're only catching it from maybe one or two. When their folks are making their own investment choices as investors, they actually trail what happens when there's an advisor involved.
Okay.
And the most recent Dalbar study, right? This is as of December 31, 2022. So they look at things on that 10-year basis, calendar year. The average investor over the 10 years from January 1, 2013 to December 31, 2022 earned about a 6% annual return.
Okay.
Now, over that time frame, 6% over 10 years, if you've not put another dime in, you've gotten close to doubling your money.
Yeah.
Because the rule of 72, right, you take the number of return periods, if you will, 72 divided by that, going to tell you how long it's going to take to double your money in there. But the typical market return in that time frame was actually about 7.7% okay. with an advisor.
Well, I mean, that kind of makes sense if you think about it, that somebody who, you know, is, I don't want to use the term knows what they're doing, but somebody who it's their job is going to do a little bit better. It's like, you know, if you go to a restaurant, that steak will probably taste a little bit better there by a really good trained chef than if you go over to, you know, buddy's backyard who just got a brand new Coleman grill for the first time.
True. Just depends on what that buddy used to do for a living. Because maybe he is that trained chef. He just got himself a new grill.
Yeah.
So, but yes, for the most part, yeah, when you're out there, you're having a professional do things and help take care of things. More often than not, you're going to see that better mix inside of that portfolio. You're going to have that asset allocation that makes a little bit more sense. Hopefully, you're working with that advisor who is paying attention to not only what has been happening in the economy, but what is also looking like it's coming down the road. One of the big things on there that I also like to point out to folks, because sometimes, well, 1.7%, that's not a lot, really. And no, not if we're talking in a single year. But if you're talking over multiple years, it begins to add up pretty quickly in that time frame. And that's also after those advisors have charged their fees. So that 7.7 compared to the 6 is actually a net of fees, meaning after you've paid the advisor to do what they do, you're still making more money than doing it on your own, which, you know, there's a reason that I take my vehicles to somebody else to have the service done, because, you know, I could probably, depending on what year the vehicle is, I can change out my plug wires. I can redo my spark plugs. Sometimes I can actually even replace that coil. But not always, and it might take me a lot longer. I know it'll take me a lot longer than it does at the actual shop, because I may or may not have all the right tools. I may or may not have, you know, just perhaps speaking from some experience here, sometimes when those the lug nuts are on and they've rounded a little bit, I might have to go through 4 or 5 different sockets with my impact wrench. And by the time I get to the third one, going back to the store to buy a new one, I'm buying like 3 and 4 at that point in time, because I should have bought them to begin with, versus, you know, the guys at the shop probably have a better way to get that out of the actual socket, and you know, have additional sockets available to them as well.
Yeah, but this begs the question, and this, you know, might get us into tangent territory, so I apologize in advance. But does this mean then that when we're looking at the markets and investing, that it is set up maybe with, you know, the average guy, you know, the quote unquote little guy, to be at a disadvantage compared to your, you know, professional career investors?
So I'll give it a sort of
okay
on there. Not so much that the market is set up that way, but it's more along the lines of, as those individual investors, we don't always know what we don't know. You know, you can go with those old adages, the typical quote unquote rule of thumb, right? Which says, hey, if the stock market is headed down, fixed income or being on the bond side is the way to go. And yeah, that's one way to kind of even out that risk as you've gone along, but it doesn't always work that way. Sometimes, in fact, you know, 2022, that was the year where both sides of that were down double digits. Now, we've seen both sides down before, but never both sides down double digits. But even inside of that, then it's knowing, okay, stocks are down, bonds are down, but which bonds are down the most versus which bonds are down the least? How are all of these interest rate issues affecting the bonds? And where can I basically hide in that bond world at that point in time?
Okay.
So that's kind of where the whole not knowing what you don't know but having that big picture can sometimes hurt us a little bit more. And oftentimes, you know, there are going to be folks out there, and I do it with people all the time. There are folks who say, hey, I've got a question. And I always look at my job, whether you have hired me as a planner, whether you have hired me as a money manager, or you just have a question, I always look at my job, first and foremost, is to educate people.
Okay.
Right? That is my job. That is my heart. That is what I want people to know, what they don't know, to be able to understand what it is that might be going on. I have people all the time that bounce those questions off. Hey, what would happen if, or what's going on here? What are some things that you see? And I'm always happy to sit and talk about that sort of stuff because, again, that's where the heart is. I want people to know. I want people to understand. And, you know, every once in a while, even when I'm sitting around my table and I get one of my kids that'll say something that I may have told them more than once and they attribute it to another bald guy on the radio with a beard, mm-hmm. with a bit of a, you know, Tennessee accent.
A little bit of a twang.
In there. There's that part of me that hurts at first because, but Dad also says this stuff. But it's also understanding, hey, I'm glad you've learned that sort of thing. Because ultimately, that's what it comes down to. So we get that big picture, right? The Dalbar study says, hey, the individual investor compared to somebody working with an advisor trails what goes on in markets by about 1.7% per year.
Okay.
Not just in the grand 10 years, but 1.7 per year. So if you actually look at that and your basic back of the envelope math.
That's just shy of 20% over a decade.
Yes. Yeah. And that 20% over a decade is where it starts to really add up in there. They also talk about what they call the annual return gap.
Okay.
Right. So looking at consecutive 10-year periods. So taking the 2013 to 2022, back it up a year, 2012 through 2021, back it up a year, 2011 through 2020. What we see actually falls right directly in line with what generally happens in that 10-year time frame. Anything from 1.5% to 1.7% trailing versus using an advisor. And the folks that I always get that question with, well, I can do this so much cheaper, right? If I do it myself, if I go to company XYZ and use their no-load indexed funds, and yes, there is cheaper, but oftentimes there's a cost to cheaper. Like I could buy a Kia or I could buy a BMW.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a cost associated with both. I'm going to pay more for the BMW, but it may be more reliable.
Yeah.
Because, you know, German engineers, what can I say?
You're saying that sometimes you get what you pay for?
Believe it or not, sometimes you get what you pay for. And sometimes if you're like the Jets and you have overpaid for a particular quarterback who spells his name incorrectly and he blows out an Achilles on the fourth play of the game, you get what you pay for, right? A 20-year guy mm-hmm. who's getting old and, you know, frail. Sometimes that happens.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the things that you pay for when you work with those professionals and being able to look at ways that you get that bang for your buck when you work with a professional versus trying to just go on your own right here on Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group.
Money affects each of us in different ways. Sometimes it's a source of stress and fear. Sometimes it's a source of comfort and security. Whatever your perspective, it's always good to get a second set of eyes on your finances to help serve as a guide. If you are looking for that guidance, call FRS Financial Group at 719-500-8700 to schedule your complimentary appointment. And remember to tune into Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group here on KRDO, Saturday mornings at 9 and Sunday at noon. Products and services offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC.
Well, folks, welcome back to Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group. Rick Stevens here in studio with Andrew Rogers. Folks, we are talking about, I think we're talking today, Andrew, about being wise with money, right? Understanding that you get what you pay for sometimes. And really, folks, we are taking a look at it from that perspective of your investment side. We're looking at the Dalbar study, the market research study that basically says, you know, these are the different things that happen to individual investors versus investors working with an advisor over the course of time.
And one of the things that was interesting in this, and kind of some of the key takeaways and in the, you know, bullet points in the first couple pages, because I think you only gave me those first couple pages for a reason, so I didn't gloss over.
Yes. There's a lot of depth to this stuff.
Yeah, but one thing that kind of, you know, stood out a little bit, and maybe it just stood out because I've got, you know, I'm not in it all the time. I'm mm-hmm. more on that, you know, kind of independent, you know, retail guy, is that those kind of quote-unquote, you know, personal investors underperformed when it came to allocation sectors as well. And does that just mean that when you're trying to do it yourself or maybe use one of the kind of Rumpelpeel set it and forget it funds that you're not actually making the right balance as opposed to working with somebody who can actually do a little bit better market forecasting?
Yep, absolutely. That's exactly what that means. Because oftentimes, and we can go to whatever website, you can just throw in, you know, help me with my asset allocation. And there's always some kind of a website with an algorithm that goes in and says, okay, what is your risk tolerance? And asks you, you know, 5 to 10 questions. Says, okay, you come out as a conservative growth risk tolerance or a moderate risk tolerance or whatever they may call it. And then they'll say, this is what your asset allocation should be. 60% equities, 40% bonds. And that's where they leave it.
Yeah.
Right? So then it's up to you to decide, well, what kind of allocation on the equity side is 60 versus the bond side, which is 40. Because quite frankly, when we start looking at all of those, we've got all kinds of potential through there. You've got allocation funds themselves, which actually are made up of both stocks and bonds. You have what we will call alternative investments. Now, that's not exactly the Bitcoin side of life, but alternative, quote unquote, investments often have things like real estate mm-hmm. inside of them. There's the international part of that. There are, on the bond side, you've got things like your municipal bonds, your government bonds, you've got corporate bonds, you've got high yield bonds, you have short duration, intermediate duration, long duration. You have total return, real return. You've got all these different alphabet soups of, oh my goodness, what could I possibly pick? And that's just, you know, a small slice, right? You have all your different types of sectors that are out there, from the small and the medium and the large and the growth versus value and consumer discretionary versus consumer cyclical versus transportation or manufacturing. And we could keep going on and on and on.
But wait. But the website only said I need to worry about 60% in equities and 40% in bonds.
Right.
So why are you mentioning all these other things? I thought a bond is a bond is a bond.
Only when he's 007 and James Bond.
I don't even know if that's the case.
Well, that's true.
I mean,
we've had several of those too.
Yeah.
Along the years. You know, it's very interesting, and this is where having that advisor through 2022 and navigating that part of the world was actually very helpful, simply because there are different types of bonds and different types of bonds react differently in different economic situations. So there are going to be times where your short-term bond is a much better bet than, say, a long-term bond. And short versus long, you know, we always talk about, you know, things being relative. It really is short versus long, because a short duration bond is basically anything that has less than 3 years until it has totally matured, totally paid off. Short duration bonds and short duration bond funds really have those particular investments because they want those last few years of interest, mm-hmm. right? They're not going to see a lot of price fluctuation. Intermediate, that's usually something that contains, on average, between 3 and 10 year duration on that bond. A lot of them, if you look at average duration or average maturity, usually have something in that 6, 7, 8 year range. And there's some of those funds. And again, this is where that advisor goes into depth, goes through, takes a look at what's actually in those underlying holdings. Because some places get their effective duration of 6 years because they have a bunch of stuff that's 2 and a bunch of stuff that's 10. But they can average that together, get a 6, and call it an intermediate.
Okay.
And then there are those others that actually hold 5, 6, 7 year funds, and that's how they get their duration in the right spot. So you want to make sure that you know you've got the right ingredients to fix that soup as you're going through. And then that long term, those are usually the 10 year plus, 10, 15, 20, even 30 year bonds that fall into those. And again, these are all going to be somewhat dependent upon what's going on in the economy. Usually on that bond side, if you have a longer duration, right, meaning I've got 10 years, 15 years, 20 years before that bond fully matures, the likelihood, the volatility, the ups and downs of that move a lot more than on the short-term mm-hmm. side, because I tell folks, think of it like this, right? If you think of it as a seesaw, all right, that teeter-totter with a fulcrum in the middle.
Yeah.
If you're equal on each side, your ups and downs are very similar. If you start to move that fulcrum one way or the other, and if we think about that as the duration, if you will, small movements on that short duration side equal big movements on that long duration side.
Yeah.
So that happens in that bond world as well. The longer that bond has to maturity, the more that price is going to move up and down over the course of time, the more you're actually going to see those assets change in value.
Yeah, and then, you know, if you're going with one of those, you know, pre-planned algorithms that was, you know, written under what should happen in those, you know, kind of perfect conditions, you don't account for what we saw the past couple years where those yields in the bond market was kind of flipped, and you had much more stability on the longer term versus the shorter term because of everything going crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes even in that, when we look back even on 2022 and in that bond world, we went from that, okay, long duration is better to, okay, short duration is better to now we want to add some duration back again and be more in that intermediate range. But we also have shifted from the types of bonds that have performed better. Way back in the beginning of this, it was like, okay, we're going to run for the safety of the government treasuries, the U.S. treasuries, especially the shorter term ones, to, okay, we actually might want to get into what are called the floating rates, because as interest rates are starting to go up, your floating rate bond funds, those are actually going to start doing a little better. But as those rates continue to rise, floating rate actually gets a little bit worse in that time frame. And then we start to peel back and go, okay, now I might need to be back into that core bond or that core plus bond world. And core and core plus just refers to the type of companies that are offering those bonds. Core and core plus, those are really looking at what is the core of the U.S. economy at that point. So, yes, you've got the energy companies. You've got food and beverage. You've got housing. You've got the manufacturing side versus technology, not part of the core and core plus world necessarily in having those bond funds built over the course of time. A lot of your technology pieces are going to fall more onto that high yield side because they are smaller companies. They have not established a great cash flow, which means they're paying a higher interest rate, which means over the long term, that's going to be better. But in that short term, with the interest rates jumping up and down, you're going to see more volatility in the price of those bonds.
Okay.
So a lot of different weird, wild, crazy things, if you will, going on through there. But, Andrew, that's actually not the biggest problem sector, if you will, for consumers trying to do it on their own.
Okay.
The biggest spot where we saw the biggest miss, if you will, by that individual investor versus the ones using the advisor was in that sector world, right?
Okay.
So that's where we break it down, technology, industrials, consumer discretionary, defensive, cyclical, all those pieces. Over the last 10 years, when we look just at the sector funds, you see advisors averaging almost an 11% return, 10.8%. But the individual investor is actually trailing by more than 4%. They're at a 6.4%.
And what is it? Is it just, you know, not having, you know, the kind of, you know, laser focus on what's happening in those sectors and being able to see the swings, or is it just not having, you know, the access to really dial into making those sector-by-sector decisions?
The big part here that I more often than not see is actually all of the above and none of the above at the same time, if that makes perfect sense coming from a Cubs and Bears fan.
I mean, why don't you just quote Evan and say it all depends?
It depends.
It kind of was just a long way to get there.
Well, I was trying not to throw that one out today because we've got the over-under on the it depends, and I went with the under. The big piece through here, oftentimes we see folks, for lack of a better term, getting in late to the game when they're making the decisions on their own. They'll look at what was the hot sector last year. Let's buy into that.
Or, you know, you see those headlines and the, you know, minute, 2 minute blurb trying to do a comprehensive market update saying, oh, NVIDIA had their earnings call, things were great, and you get onto it afterwards, as opposed to some of the investors who might have been paying attention, who were looking at that and could get onto it beforehand and really take advantage of the actual announcement, get in lower and really take that full swing up.
Exactly, exactly. Or you get the folks that look at go, hey, 2022, as a sector, energy was up 60%. I need to be in energy.
Yeah.
Well, in 2023, energy is actually the worst performing sector for this year. So folks are making those emotional, really irrational decisions, trying to what we oftentimes on my side of the desk say they're chasing returns. What was the best? But the key to understanding that is what was the best probably isn't the best the following year.
Yeah.
More often than not, and you can actually go into the Google machine and just type in quilt chart. That's all you got to do is type in a quilt chart. And, you know, virtually every asset manager out there has a quilt chart. By the way, it's all the same. It doesn't matter what it's branded. It's all the same because it looks at these sectors over the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. So if we were to look at last year, 2022, as a sector, commodities, which is where energy falls, was up 16% for the year. But if you look at their 20-year average, they're up 1.7 over the 20 years, which means they spend a lot of time at the bottom of that chart as well. And they equal out coming in actually only slightly ahead of cash over the last 20 years. Last year, the worst performing sector was large cap growth. As a sector, your large cap growth was down 29% last year. But the 10-year average is almost 11% in that, 10.78 over the last 20 years on that. Which means, yeah, last year it was really bad, but there are some years when it's very good.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, it's like middle to top. So that's going to typically outweigh the years that it's toward the bottom. But that's not to say that we always want everything in that sector.
Yeah.
Because, yes, you could get a nice 2019 or 2020 where we were up 36 and 38%, or you get a 2022 where we were down 29% in large cap, or you can actually go all the way back to 2008 where large cap was down almost 40. It was down 38.5%. That year, a lot of folks not real happy about being down those big, giant double-digit numbers compared to what those top numbers do to us. Because we talked about this several weeks ago on another show talking about the psychology. But the psychology of a gain versus a loss, you actually feel a 5% loss more than you feel a 10% gain.
Yeah.
So that negative feels twice as bad as any positive that you get out of here.
Well, and I think, you know, you mentioned it earlier, and I think it's worth kind of going back to, is that you see a lot of the retail investors, you know, kind of the people doing it on their own, looking for that profit, looking for that gain, and just focusing on how can I take 20 to 30, 20 to 40, how can I hit it?
Yes.
As opposed to if you're working with a professional money manager, a professional investor, they're looking at how can you retire sustainably? How can we take this pot and get even growth but have a actual livable pot? And I think that's something that oftentimes gets looked out on this.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's feeling that I want to, you know, double what I've got. I want to triple what I've got. I want to quadruple what I've got. And for lack of a better term, we miss the forest for the trees. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to hit every cliche, by the way, on today's show. We are looking at that almost that immediate gratification, not looking so much how it affects that big long-term picture. Whereas on the advisor side, I like predictable. Yeah. I like predictability. I like to be able to look at something and go, okay, in situation A, investment B ought to behave in manner C. And I can draw those lines through there. And I always say, you know, you can ask me what stock is going to do great this week. Ask me what fund is going to do great this year. And I will probably get that wrong.
Yeah.
But if you want to know what's going to do well in the next 10, on average, I could probably get pretty close. Mm-hmm. Because those that have done well the last 10, assuming similar market conditions, and you've always got to throw that caveat, right? Similar market conditions, because future gains are not guaranteed based on past performance. However, we can see behaviors. We can find patterns in behaviors, whether that's the behavior of the fund manager, whether that's behavior of the investment committee running that fund, whether that's the behavior of the particular underlying holdings in the economy. Mm-hmm. Behaviors can be predictable if given a long enough time frame.
Yeah.
And that's the key. We've got to see it over a long time frame. We can't just go, well, this was the best this year, it's going to be the best next year. We also can't do that George Costanza the opposite side either. We can't always look at it and say, well, this was the worst last year, so it'll be the best this year. Because last year's quote-unquote worst of large cap growth is doing pretty well this year. But if we go over the last several years, toward the bottom of that list in 2022 was global bonds. At the bottom of the list in 2021 was global bonds. Though global bonds were towards the top in 2020, they were back towards the bottom in 2019. And regardless of what quilt chart you go through and find, just track that individual piece all the way across, and you're going to see some pretty consistent patterns. That's going to show you why, in the average 20 years, global bonds have only returned about 2.75% per year on average.
Okay.
So yeah, you might have a great year. You can have a lousy year, but more often than not, even their quote-unquote great years are probably still going to be towards the bottom of everything that's growing, which is why ultimately we want that well-balanced portfolio.
So what? So if I'm hearing you right, if you're looking at, you know, one of these quilt charts, you want to stay almost kind of in that middle where you see more of the kind of consistency, where it's never really the top or the bottom. It's almost like they have like a curve built for these kind of decisions that might look like a bell, and you just want to kind of stay in the middle.
Exactly. Exactly. And part of that is going to depend on the actual investor themselves. Oftentimes in that quilt chart, they're going to put in there what's called a quote-unquote diversified portfolio. That technically is that 60-40 mix, that 60% equity, 40% fixed income, 40% bond, if you will. And yes, you're going to see that typically over the course of 20 years stays pretty close to that middle. It
yeah.
might vary up one or two or down one or two. Well diversified is never going to be at the very top, never going to be at the very bottom, even in a year like 2022, because the more aggressive you are, typically, the higher those ups and downs can be. And, you know, that rule of thumb I generally have is folks who are younger, they're in that 20, 30, even 40 age range. If we're talking about retirement funds, you want to typically be more aggressive. As we get to the retirement world, you want to pull that risk off the table, be less aggressive, take fewer ups and downs, usually, especially in those 5 years coming into retirement. Because the last thing we need to do is have you with a retirement target of maybe 2010 or 2011 and be fully aggressive and 2008 happens. We don't want that going on.
Yeah, and, you know, we've got to take one more short break. And there's that other component that I think we lose out on when you're talking about kind of individual investors versus working with a professional, working with an advisor. And you could have all this stuff, but it's also that timing as well. We're going to break that down as we continue here on Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group.
Does stock market volatility have you wondering which way is up? Do the talking heads and doomsayers have you wondering if this really is the end? If you want straight answers from an advisor who isn't just trying to sell you something, call FRS Financial Group at 719-500-8700 to schedule your complimentary appointment today. And remember to tune into Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group here on KRDO, Saturday mornings at 9 and Sunday at noon. Products and services offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC.
Well, folks, thanks for sticking with us through that break here on Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group. Rick Stevens with you in studio with Andrew Rogers. Andrew, we've been talking a lot of different things. We've talked about that Dalbar study that has talked a bit about the individual investor and what their returns are versus folks working with and paying an advisor. And we also spent a segment, you know, really kind of getting into that asset allocation piece of it. But there's one more part, and quite frankly, it's a pretty big component in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, and we kind of touched about it, you know, a couple different ways. We danced all around it, where, you know, looking at some of the, you know, independent and kind of on your own investors just looking for that gain. And of course, when you're looking for that gain and when you're looking for that gratification, we also want that more instant gratification. You don't want to really play the long game. You want to get in, you want to find the next GameStop, you want to put $50 in, wake up a millionaire, and ride off into the sunset, but that doesn't happen almost ever.
Right, right. It's sort of that that slot machine mentality of, let me put in my nickel and win 10,000. That does happen sometimes, right? It's that person who never buys the lottery ticket but decides one day to go play all of their grandkids' birthdays as the lottery numbers and wins the Powerball.
Yeah.
It happens, but not often, and not often enough to even be able to predict when or if it will ever happen.
Yeah, and it happens is also, and again, you work in this every day, so correct me if I'm wrong, obviously, but I don't think it happens is a great investment strategy.
No, it's kind of up there with what we call hopium. Right. Hopium is not an investment strategy either. Right. I'm going to throw my money all into this and hope it does well. Not a good investment strategy. Andrew, as you know, the name of my fantasy football team is the Blind Squirrels because I may not be the best fantasy football manager, but every once in a while, the blind squirrel finds a nut. And yeah, you can in the investment world get lucky. You can find that nut every once in a while, but it's not something that's going to be predictable.
Yeah.
The biggest thing that folks often think about is, I want to be able to perfectly time the market. There are actually commercials out there. We'll teach you how to time the market. No, they won't.
Yeah.
They're going to teach you some things to look at, but that doesn't mean that they've taught you to time it perfectly, because quite frankly, nobody can time the market. In fact, if you talk to, read anything by folks who are professional fund managers, they will tell you that just like in Vegas, they only have to be right 55% of the time in order to win with that mutual fund.
Yeah, because haven't you mentioned it before, too, that, you know, even if you take away, you know, the one or two best or worst days, proving that you're in the market is still better than not actually doing it at all?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's another study that was done by FactSet Research, and they actually looked at a 20-year period, right, from January 2003 through December 2022. And they created this hypothetical situation. They took five investors and said, let's say that each of these investors got a $10,000 bonus every year. What is the difference between timing everything perfectly, buying at the perfect low every time with that $10,000, versus just putting $10,000 in the day you got it, mm-hmm. versus spreading the 10,000 out over the course of the year equally, and that's what we call dollar cost averaging, versus picking the worst day to have put it in, you bought at the high every time, versus you just left it as cash.
Yeah.
And there were some interesting results out of that.
Okay.
Now, again, we're looking backwards. So looking backwards over the last 20 years, we can absolutely pick the perfect day, the bottom of the market, to have perfectly put this money in. And if you had perfect timing, we got 20 years, $10,000 a year being given to you as a bonus. Mm-hmm. That's $200,000 over that time frame you've had come in to be able to invest. In 20 years, if you had perfect timing, you end up with a little bit more than $724,000 at the end of that 20 years.
Okay.
If you took the money and put it in January 1, didn't worry about up, down, you just put it in on January 1, at the end of those 20 years, your 200 is still $637,000.
Okay.
So that's the, I've got a lump sum, do I dollar cost average it in, do I put it all in at once, do I wait for the perfect time? In a 20-year time frame, there's not a major, major difference. Yeah, in 20 years, you're going, that's a $100,000 difference. It's $5,000 a year if you break it out over those 20. So it's not as big a difference as it might feel. The biggest interesting piece is that your dollar cost averaging. If you're putting in that amount each month, you took the $10,000, you put it in at the first of each month in that time frame, still nets you $617,000 over those 20 years. So a little bit less, but quite frankly, from a statistical perspective, very little less than if you put it all in at once. So for those folks that always ask me, hey, do I put this all in at once or should I put it in over the course of the year? My answer to them still remains, how disciplined are you? Are you disciplined enough to do it over the year? Are you disciplined enough to save it over the year and put it in at once? Either way, it's not going to make a great, big, giant difference in that long run.
Yeah.
It's okay to fully fund that IRA April 15th every year whenever you're doing your taxes. It's also okay to put it in on a monthly basis as part of your budget.
And what would it look like then if you just didn't do anything?
Well, if you didn't do anything, over the last 20 years, if you took that $10,000 a year and you just waited and you went, I want to make sure it's the perfect time. Oh, that perfect time was yesterday. I'm going to wait for the next perfect time. And you never put your money in. At the end of 20 years, you have about $220,000.
Okay.
So perfect timing, up over 700. If you have no timing, right, you stayed it all in cash, you've only got about a third of that, 220. Andrew, if you have the worst timing ever.
Yeah.
If you are the guy who put the money in and it was always at the top that year. It was never at the bottom. It was always at the top. At the end of 20 years, that $200,000 that you've put in is still $550,000. It's still more than twice what you would have of not putting it in ever. So even if you've got bad timing, the key to this is it might be bad timing, but it's not about timing the market. It's about the time in the market.
Yeah.
It's actually about not being afraid of what could happen on the downside, but realizing that over the course of 10, 20 years, yeah, things are going up and down. But quite frankly, and I've told folks this, when you get to your retirement, right? If you are retiring December 31st of 2023, you're probably not going to have any idea what was going on in the market on September 14th, 2006.
Yeah.
You're probably not going to have any idea what happened in the market that particular day. So worrying about trying to find the perfect time, the perfect way to do it, actually hurts you in the end because you want to have that money in there allocated the right way, right, according to whatever your risk tolerance is at that point, and let that money work. Now you know my hairstyle, Andrew, or complete lack thereof. Although, you know, it's been a couple weeks, so it's, you know, it's almost grown out an eighth of an inch at this point.
It's almost stubble if you squint.
Almost. I always tell folks, watching the markets every day will make you pull your hair out.
Yeah.
So let me do that for you, because mine's already gone. It doesn't matter in my world anymore. But if you've got a luscious head of hair, you want to keep that.
Yeah. And if you're, you know, playing along at home and you want to fill out that cliche bingo again, the only people who get hurt on the roller coaster are the ones that
jump off.
Exactly.
You know, and that's an old adage. That is that part that is true. There are also some studies out there that talk about those folks who do sell. More often than not, from the behavioral side, it's because we've gotten freaked out and we've sold at the bottom, so we've locked in the losses. But it's typically 6 to 16 months before those folks are ready to put their money back into the market, at which point they've typically missed the entire recovery of that down market by staying on the sidelines and waiting until it comes back up. However, had you just stayed in, you would be perhaps where you were at, or maybe even higher up down that line. If we look at where the markets are today versus where they were at the beginning of 2022, so before everything went south, January 1, 2022, to where we're at today, we had a big ride down last year, but we've actually had a very big ride back up this year. And a lot of folks, while we're not quite all the way back to where we were, we're very close.
Yeah.
But those folks that in, you know, June, July, August, September last year said, I can't take it anymore, I'm out, they're still down, you know, 15-20% from where they were at the beginning of 2022, instead of maybe being down 3-5.
Yeah, and those people who, you know, trusted in that too also got to buy at a lower spot and see that actual margin be a little bit higher as you kind of ride that recovery.
Exactly, exactly. Those folks who were continuing to put in, who, you know, whether that was a lump sum, whether that was that month over month disciplined buy that folks were doing, yeah, you got to buy at much lower prices. And, you know, we talked about this a few weeks ago with Bill Smead. The two types or two styles, if you will, of value stocks. One is that stock that you look at that company, you say, okay, these guys have very good process in place. They've got good people in place. They are going to become very profitable, but right now they're trading for less than we think the company is worth. That's one of those value plays. This company's going to grow, it's going to get bigger, and it'll no longer be value. Then there's that value play of, oh my goodness, you know, the sky is falling, everybody sell, and that drives the price of those big companies down, and now the price of those big companies became a sale price, and they're down 15, 20, 25%. Good time to be able to buy in at that low price. I always tell folks, I'm a pin snob. Yeah. I use a Pilot G2, preferably a Pilot G2 7. I like the medium. I'm not the fine point. I'm not the, you know, big, giant, wet, gel stuff guy. Typically, I am a Pilot G2 7. I've used that pin for probably the last 20 years. I use none other. Will I go buy it at regular price? If I'm out of pins and I absolutely have to, I'll probably buy a two-pack. Mm-hmm. However, in August, sometimes now even in July, they have this thing called a back-to-school sale.
I hear they're going to start one up next week for next school year.
I believe they probably will, and they probably got the Easter stuff out as well coming up, because I swear I saw Christmas stuff in June.
Oh, of course. Just go to Costco.
So you get that back-to-school sale where those pins are now half price. When those pins come down, I don't buy that two-pack, Andrew. I buy the 20-pack box.
Ooh.
Because I just bought 20 for the price that I can usually buy 10. And after no longer being in a classroom, I've discovered something really cool, Andrew. You can run a pen out of ink.
Yeah.
I didn't know that as a classroom teacher. Mine never lasted that long. But as an advisor, when nobody's stealing my pens every day, you can run those out of ink. So those 20 pens in that box, I buy that box about every 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
So buying those things that are on sale, stocking up on them, if you will, when things have that low price, because it's a quality item, to quote Cousin Eddie from Christmas Vacation. It's a quality item. It's going to be useful. It's going to be good. It's going to continue to do what you want it to do, which, you know, what I want that Pilot G2 is to write well and smoothly and, you know, not be missing spots as I'm, you know, signing something. I like that nice, smooth sort of gel that comes out of there. It's going to be a good pen, whether I paid $2 for it or whether I paid $1 for it. Yeah. Still a good pen. I just bought it on sale. And that's that key to, you know, not jumping off the train, not jumping off the roller coaster, but sticking that ride through, because what comes down also generally comes back up in that investing world.
Yeah, and it's, you know, like you mentioned earlier, it's all about kind of getting all the ingredients into that stew, but you got to let it simmer and have that long-term range to actually be, you know, usable as that retirement, not just that pull of a slot machine arm, not just trying to, you know, cruise Reddit, find what the next big, you know, overnight sensation would be.
Yep, exactly. It's not, it's not looking for that immediate gratification. It is having that long-term vision, staying the course. Yeah, you might make some minor course corrections. I don't know about you, but I can tell you that I, as I'm driving from Colorado Springs to Denver, I don't stay in the same lane on I-25 the whole time. I will move to the left. I will move to the right. Make that small course correction here and there.
You don't just stay in one lane?
No, I don't stay in one lane when I'm driving. Well, now I will stay in one lane with my baseball team, my softball team, and my, you know, football team and basketball team. I'm rooting for particular folks, and I keep them the whole time through there. But I make adjustments as I'm going along that path. Sometimes they're big adjustments. Sometimes it's, you know what, there's a T-Swift concert, and everything is backed up to Castle Rock, so I'm actually going to go around and take 83 and go up the back way. But the key is I'm taking a different route to the same destination. I don't just go, you know what, that's it, I'm out, I'm not doing anything.
Yeah,
I don't totally get off the road. Mm-hmm. So, well, folks, that is all the time that we have for this edition of Money Matters. If there's anything that you heard on today's show that you've got a question about, something you would like to talk about a little bit more, a little bit deeper, because, folks, I know we covered a lot of stuff in there, a lot of it being on that behavior of the individual investor, why it's better to work with an advisor than to try to do it all on your own. If you've got something you would like to talk about, the consultation with us is always complimentary, always welcome to give us a call, 719-500-8700. We'll sit down with you, go over what you've got, where you're at, where you're headed, and what's going to make the most sense and how to get you to that destination you're headed to on that retirement map or whatever dollar sort of goal that you've got out there. We, ladies and gentlemen, will be back next week right here on Money Matters. Andrew, we're going to continue talking about their money. Did you know that?
I think so.
You know why?
Because your money matters.
That's right. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.